Welcome to the Montreal Sessions. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. This is Mariam for the second episode of our radio residency promoting Pop Montreal at the end of September. Today we are doing our 20th anniversary time capsule episode, so I'll be speaking to Dan, creative director, Dan Seligman, so stay tuned for that interview. On the second hour, I'll also be speaking to Maxine Danat, who did our tome, our 20th year program. So that was really interesting to delve into. And as for the episode itself, we'll be playing extremely eclectic selections of past acts, including some that are still performing this season. But stay tuned for 20 years of pop coming to you at CKUT 90.3 FM. This is Mariam.
How are things on the West Coast? I hear you moving real fine. You wear those shoes like a dove. Now strut those shoes, we'll go roaming in the night. Well, how are things on the West Coast? You keep it moving to your soul's delight. Now I've tried the brakes. I've tried, but you know it's a lonely ride. How are things on the West Coast? Oh, I'd move heaven behind those eyes. Today my heart swings. Yet a day my heart swings. But I don't want to take your heart. On the West Coast, you're moving real fine tonight. You wear the shoes side to side. All stuck with shoes, we'll go roaming in the night. Well, how are things on the West Coast? Yeah, but you're an actress and I don't identify. Today my heart swings. Yeah, today.
Festival edition, or 20th year anniversary edition of the Pop Montreal Radio Residency at CKUT, I am joined by Creative Director Dan Seligman.
Hi, nice to be here.
Yeah, you too. I teched once for you and JoJo, like, 2018, so
oh, cool.
I'm a little,
nice.
I feel like this will be a worse experience just because
it's great. I'm comfortable, I'm in my office.
Yeah, one of your many floors. Yeah. No stairs to the Pop Montreal building, as we found out this morning.
Yeah.
But everything else is going. Dan, can you tell me how the nonprofit itself was conceived?
Sure. Well, initially when we started the festival, it was like kind of loose and fly by the seat of your pants. So we just did like a basic general like partnership to open a bank account. But it wasn't incorporated. We were just like a few people who were like passionate about music, wanted to make a festival.
And then Peter and Noel, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Peter and I had like the limited partnership, like in legal terms, in order to open up a bank account, et cetera, et cetera. And then after the third year of the festival, we were like, okay, we need to get like real and serious about this, and we want to develop it. So we decided to become a nonprofit organization. And initially, we had a couple for-profit corporations set up to kind of like buffer the nonprofit and do more of the production side of things, and kind of modeled that after like what the Jazz Fest does. Like Jazz Fest had Spectra and Just for Laughs. That seemed to be like the kind of standard formation for cultural enterprises in Quebec. But that didn't really work out so much just because we weren't that business oriented, and like our main mandate wasn't like to be a corporation and like make piles of money. It was really just like trying to be a music festival, not like a cultural organization. So after several years, we kind of separated the for-profit company from the nonprofit, and you know, since then, it's the festival has been a nonprofit, and it's, I mean, it allows us to fulfill our mandate on a cultural side, but also allows us to apply for a lot of like the government grants that we wouldn't be eligible for as a for-profit corporation.
I mean, yeah, the results speak for themselves. It was definitely worth the paperwork, I would say, but I guess
Yeah, it's a
that's,
bit of a pain
yeah.
at the beginning when you're trying to figure it all out. Like for anyone who's listening, who's like, oh, I just started a music festival or whatever, like it is a bit of extra work at the beginning, and like you do actually have to have a mandate and a board of directors and all these things. And that's something that we've kind of developed over the years. And like even though we did have like a board of directors initially, it was pretty loose, and it's something that we've kind of grown into, and I think it's definitely worth it. Like if you want to kind of be a sustainable cultural institution, arts organization in Canada, I think it's kind of like necessary.
Certainly, certainly. I guess that brings me to my next question because while you were filling out all these necessary actions, like was it always the plan to function for decades and decades? Like what kind of spiraled into a continuous, what employed people for so long?
Yeah, I mean, there was never really a long, at least from my perspective, it wasn't like a long, long-term plan. I got into it just because I didn't really know any better, I guess. Like I was involved in music and the arts. I actually like was volunteer. I volunteered or like with a couple of the CKT shows like
Oh
way
yeah.
back in the day. I think We Funk is still around.
Yes,
Like that was one of
definitely.
the first shows. Like I had a couple friends who worked on that, and so I filled in a couple times on We Funk and a couple other shows. So I was always interested in music and culture, and my brother's in a band, and that's how I kind of got involved more on like the show promotion side. But I never had like a great huge plan to be like a music promoter or start a festival, and it just kind of happened. And so to me, it's like every year is like an opportunity to like put on an amazing event, and you work really hard, and it's like you know, it's definitely not easy. It's a huge challenge, but it's an exciting one. And so, and after every festival, you're like, oh, well, I should have done that better. Or like, next year I can do this. And so, like, with each edition, you kind of learn and grow and kind of build. So there was never like, I want to be like, you know, a millionaire in 20 years and blah, 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 blah. It was really like, let's keep this going. And like I guess the greatest accomplishment I can think of is just like the fact that it's turned into like a sustainable event that hires people, that gives a lot of opportunity to young people who are like learning and starting out in the business. I mean, to me, that's like what, you know, what I'm proud of is that it has become part of like the cultural landscape in Montreal and Quebec, Canada, etc., and that like people have either stayed with the festival and become part of the family and the team, or like stayed for many years and moved on, or had a great experience and done other cool things. So yeah, I mean, I think now we're at a point where we're kind of like fairly steady, and we're still growing, but not in like a try to be bigger way, but just kind of be better and like you know, more sustainable, more equitable, and all those things that I think are important right now.
Yeah, it makes a huge impact. In fact, I know people who have moved to Montreal because of your brother's song. So,
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the one that mentioned Champlain.
Yeah, nice. Okay.
So, yeah, ripple effect, butterfly effect, yeah. I guess. Yeah, more vaguely, like, are there any big changes or kind of landmarks in the past few years of the way pop has grown? Actually, someone at CKUT called it the new pop deal once because it employs so many people for such seasonal.
Yeah, I mean, I think there hasn't been any. I mean, COVID has obviously been like the biggest, like, you know, change. But, you know, I think we've kind of settled into our new office space. I mean, we've been here for over 5 years now, but I think it's been really great to be on Park Avenue and have more of a face in the neighborhood and have Espace Pop, even though it's like a small space, it's still cool to have that available to like people in the neighborhood. And, you know, I'm really excited about what will happen with L'Entrepôt 77. Like,
yes.
Like,
you transform that space into
It has a lot of potential. It's a lot easier for us than Marché des Possibles, I think, on a production side. I think it makes a lot more sense. And I think it makes more sense for everyone because the park itself was like a little more complicated. I think green space, especially like right now in the Mile End, is you know, they're like everyone. Like there's not much. It's a very dense neighborhood. So like to be able to take over a space that wasn't a park that kind of could potentially be like a
like. How did it happen? Yeah, was it Eric's doing? Or the
director of
Entrepôt?
Entrepôt,
as you've been using it for a long time.
Yeah, we had been like there's an organization called Cabane 77, and they were doing like film screenings back when the building still existed.
Okay.
And there had definitely been talks and people in the neighborhood, people in cultural organizations who are interested in that space, potentially turning it into like a multidisciplinary art space. And so people had been petitioning the city for a while. And then it burned down a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then last summer, Marché des Possibles didn't happen. And then this summer, the city had been, they had asked us for like a proposal to do something outdoor. And we thought that doing it in the park would be too difficult with contact tracing and like entering and, you know, just cornering off that whole area. It would have been weird, especially in a city park. So Eric pitched the idea of the Entrepôt 77 space, which we had always like imagined doing stuff in. So it was really cool to kind of get the go ahead from the city. And then long term, you know, we're looking at, you know, potentially making it, you know, 3 seasons out of the year, outdoor space,
definitely,
covered roof, you know,
definitely,
like open to different kinds of events. I think it could be really cool.
I'm just really impressed with the idea itself. Like, I mean, the space was unutilized, and now it is. And I guess speaking of COVID restrictions, we're two weeks away now from the festival. And last year you got, I guess, what, 5-6 months notice that it would be a very bizarre situation. What did you plan for this year in comparison to last year? Have you had enough time to handle all the vaccine?
Yeah.
Logistics.
Well, one thing that I learned from last year is that you can't really prepare too far in advance, because the situation with COVID is changing so like frequently, and you know, so like in May or, you know, April, May this year, like people were like saying, "Oh, well, by September things will be like back to normal."
Oh, I thought that. Yeah.
And I think we were always fairly cautious and conservative and never envisioned never were banking on like a full-on festival. Like we always were prepared for like kind of where we're at now, like restrictions still in place. We'll still be doing hybrid types of events. It won't be full capacity. So we never like released, you know, the full capacity type of, like, you know, we never had like 1,000 tickets on sale at Rialto because we just knew it wouldn't be possible, or we didn't think it would, and you know. And I think we made the right decision, obviously.
Yes,
I think it was
yes.
better to be cautious about it, not have too many events, not rely on, like, you know, hundreds of artists coming from all around the world. Like, let's plan, you know, as if, like, pandemic is going to still be going on for a while and we need to be cautious. And, like, we didn't even know that there'd be, like, this crazy Delta strain situation. But you never know with these things. And I think, like, I'd say we're still, like, another year away from kind of being, like, I think all the kids need to be vaccinated and blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, to me, what's more important is that we are going on with the festival. It's not going to be, like, perfect. It's not going to be, like, a crazy free-for-all. But I think, you know, we'll still have live events. You'll still be able to see music. You'll still be having... be able to have fun. It'll just be a little more restrained than usual.
Yeah. Well, I've noticed as an intern here that Pop does always take the high road for health restrictions, and they do always just like err on the side of, well, safety in the pandemic.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we get a lot of funding from the government, so and I think we just have to be responsible. Like, we have enough money to like enact all the safety measures and be extra careful, and you know, like,
sure.
I think it would be a little different if we were just like a DIY punk promoter who, like, you know, didn't have like the resources to be extra careful.
Well, it's particularly interesting in the entertainment sector, I think. I mean, I guess COVID aside, when we're talking about the festival itself, and now that we're in crunch time, how do you still go about booking, and what do you look for in the acts that you have been approving for COVID? I know it's a lot more local than usual.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly local. We had one artist coming from the States, Cakes Tequila, who was supposed to play last year.
And he's doing the symposium.
As well. And we had a few artists who we had booked for 2020, and we were like, well, if the borders open and everything's okay, then we'll like honor those contracts. But we didn't go out, like soliciting international artists this year, because there was too much unknown. We didn't know when the border was gonna open. We didn't know what the restrictions were gonna be. So even just having the one artist coming from the States, it's definitely like, you know, 50 times more work just figuring out all the little details of like coming across the border, how many tests you need, like this and that, the COVID passport, the, you know, all the different stuff. It's just like a lot more logistical work. So, you know, just having one is more than enough. If we had like 25 artists all coming from, you know, different countries, it would not be, not be easy at all. So I think we made the right call on that. And, you know, in terms of selecting, you know, artists playing the festival, I mean, we're always just looking for interesting, cool, new sounding music. We don't like intentionally try to be eclectic per se, but I think, you know, I think it would be boring if you just had like one kind of music. It's a pop music festival, and I think pop encompasses multi-genres, and so we just try to reflect that. And even within a particular lineup, I try to just like push the envelope a little bit, and like, you know, and not just keep it like one, because like, I think, you know, I think we have to push the boundaries a little bit, and like, and hope that, like, you know, listeners and music fans have an open mind and like are, you know, oh, like, yeah, I'm a hip hop fan, but I'm also like into experimental electronic music or whatever, you know. And I think most Montreal music fans are pretty open minded and into like all kinds of different stuff.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, Quebec as a whole, I think, is very, very open-minded. And even, I mean, Pop Montreal gets submissions from all sorts of noise bands from Italy, rock bands from Italy.
Oh, yeah, that's
like,
true. We had a lot of Italian submissions
this year. I've noticed that.
Which
and I think
was
it's
weird.
Because, and even the analytics online, like, just...
I don't know, something happened in Italy this year. I don't know if it was, like, an article about Pop Montreal or, like...
happens.
I am not quite sure, but I mean, maybe I'll get invited to Italy to go to a conference. That would be fun.
Yeah. Plan B is my Italian girlfriend coming to a show.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That'd be cool.
What's a particularly memorable show Papa's put on in all 20 seasons?
Yeah, that's very difficult. There's been a lot of, like, incredible performances. I get, like, for me, one that definitely stands out that I don't think I'll ever forget was when we had Sister Nancy, who's like a dance hall DJ from Jamaica. She lives in Newark now. She's like, I think she has recently stopped, like, in the last 5 years, but she was working at a bank for, like, a long time, and, like, legendary Jamaican musician, singer, and then kind of, like, was somewhat forgotten about, I guess. Anyway, we had her perform. She played at a club called Club Lambie, which doesn't exist anymore. It's like Saint Laurent below Mount Royal. And when she got in, I think it was Moss Man was her DJ, and we decided to, instead of doing, like, the show on the stage, we set it up where she was just behind the sound booth, but the sound booth was kind of elevated, and so it just turned into this, like, incredible vibe, like, packed club, and, like, everyone was kind of just, like, huddled around the sound booth and her, and it was just, like, a freestyle kind of for, like, an hour, and it was just, like, an amazing, it just, like, felt like being in the dance hall, so that was definitely one of the memorable moments. And I think, like, that kind of thing where you just make, like, a slight adjustment on, like, expectations really, like, changes the overall.
What stands out. That's it, yeah. I mean, if you, the creative director remembers it, like, it definitely made an impression. That's super cool. I guess my last question for you is, like, with this creativity in mind, where do you see the like, pop as an organization going in the future? Maybe the festival, maybe, like, other projects. I know you've announced some, like, one-off shows for 2022. Those are already getting buzz.
Yeah, we'll continue to do, you know, shows here and there throughout the year. And, yeah, hopefully be able to kind of, like, you know, use our resources to continue to promote, you know, local or international artists, especially during COVID times. I think it's, like, really important for institutions like us to continue to do stuff, because we're able to put on events even with restrictions, and I think everyone needs it. The artists need it, the audiences need it. You know, thinking about the future of pop, I think, you know, the, like, lessons learned from COVID, like less is more sometimes, so, like, doing cool shows in people's backyards or, like, the rooftop, like, you don't need 5,000 people to make, like, the right ambiance, and you don't necessarily need 500 bands playing, like, so I think, yeah, just kind of, like, finding that, like, nice spot where, like, there's a good buzz around the festival, there's, like, the energy of crowds, but it's also, you know, like, a little bit more refined, and maybe less shows, but, like, different locations, and just, like, taking real, like, being careful, and, like, about where you put people, and, you know, obviously growing the organization, and, you know, paying local artists better. I think that's really important, like, just, you know, building, just helping artists develop and have careers, and, you know, continuing to do cool stuff.
No, I am perpetually so impressed by the organization, and it was very funny to see shows that Eric could not promote, like the Ruel, the pop-up shows. It is just interesting. Yeah. Very adaptable organism. That's it for me, Dan. Thank you so much.
Cool. Yeah, thanks so much. And
see you at the festival.
Yeah. Long live CKUT.
Long live CKUT.
Rushes in, here to stay. Rush. So my dear.
We listened to the Dan Seligman interview, and going into our second hour, we have one more interview about the program left. Again, this is the Montreal Sessions, promoting pop. I'm Marion. If you're curious about any of the music, feel free to download the archive later, or just look up any of our past lineups, because that's what we're going for this 20th year anniversary episode. Thank you so much for listening. This is CKUT 90.3 FM, and I'm Mariam, your host, from 3 to 5 this Tuesday.
The times we had, oh, and the